Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Alec, for that gracious introduction. Both Nancy and I appreciate the warm welcome by all of our friends here in Georgia. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank Dot Burns, who volunteered her time and energy to make this event possible, and to the hundreds of Republican leaders across the state who have worked to build a stronger and more competitive Republican Party. I am honored to share this head table with such distinguished Georgians. All of Georgia should be proud of their accomplishments on behalf of their countrymen. We're all grateful for your work with President George Bush. I'm proud of President Bush, and I know you are too. And Newt, you have made us all proud, rising to the rank of the second most powerful Republican member of the U.S. House of Representatives. Much of the economic growth and opportunity generated in the last 10 years is due to the tireless work and commitment of congressmen like Newt Gingrich. And Alec, we're excited about the work you're doing for the Republican Party in Georgia. Your vision for this party is clear, and your commitment to success is unwavering. You're a credit to this party, and we're grateful for your efforts. Ladies and gentlemen, it is without a doubt that the Republican Party in Georgia truly is the rising majority, and 1990 will be the year to prove it. The only ones yet to recognize it are the local Democrats, who've lulled themselves into a false sense of security, false because they just don't see what's happening around them. As 9 years ago, there was only one county in Georgia represented by a majority of Republicans in their county commission. That single county represented less than 1% of the total population. Today, 25% of the total population is represented by Republican-held county commissions, and the number is growing. People want a change. And most of you in this room, you made a change quite some time ago or already. From 1980 to 1990, the state budget in Georgia increased 8 times faster than the population. And tax revenue increased 7 times faster than the people paying the taxes. Georgia ranks number 4 in the nation in high school dropouts, with 1 out of every 3 Georgians quitting school before the age of 16. Georgians are tired of trying to make ends meet while state taxes continue to rise. They're tired of fearing crime by repeat offenders who are convicted only to be returned to the streets because of early release. They're tired of reading state education statistics that don't match the rhetoric by Democratic leadership. They're tired, and they want a change. They won't find it in the Democratic ranks, where the same old failed policies of the past prevail. But today, they will find it right here in Tom Murphy's ballroom, because the Republican Party is the change they seek. And in 1990, Georgians have their best opportunity to elect a Republican governor since 1966, when the Democrats took away the election from my good friend Bo Calloway. I I salute our Republican candidates who've announced for governor and all the others who put their name on the line and made a commitment to run. And I'm confident our Republicans will win because it's our party that has brought America to its present point of greatness. Because we believed in America and we gave the country back to the people. We stood together and stood firm against communism. We stood firm for human rights. And today, America and indeed the world is a changed place. Across the Atlantic, other great nations are being reclaimed by their people. Think for a moment about what has happened in Hungary, Poland, Romania, Czechoslovakia, and above all, in the Soviet Union. A few short months ago, we could only dream of the changes which are now realities. Nowhere has the picture of freedom been more vivid than at the Berlin Wall. I don't think there's anyone here who was not moved to tears when they saw the pictures of the reunions of families and friends who for so long, for much too long, were kept apart from each other by that ugly structure. My friends, the wall is crumbling, and so too is communism. Freedom triumphs, as we always knew it would. We have every reason to be joyful, but so too we must be vigilant. What has been started in Eastern Europe must continue. There can be no let up in our insistence that peoples everywhere be allowed to choose their form of government and be allowed to live in freedom. I'm more hopeful than ever that our friends across the Atlantic can soon come to know the kind of country we all know and love. Think of what we've accomplished together. We brought about the longest period of sustained economic prosperity ever. We rebuilt our military. When I took office in the White House, I discovered that on any given day, fully 50% of our military aircraft couldn't fly for lack of spare parts. Fully 50% of our naval vessels couldn't leave port for the same reason or for lack of crew. And something had to be done. Incidentally, over 90% of our enlisted personnel in the service were high school dropouts. Today, 94% of them are high school graduates. But our work is far from over. We're entering the second decade of Republican leadership in the White House, and as we look to the future, we have before us great opportunities. But George Bush needs people at all levels of government, federal, state, and local, who will work with him to continue what we all began. The economic growth and peace through strength, which have brought us this far, can continue only if we Republicans do our job and elect the people who share our commitment to a greater America. If we do, then I know we'll have a great future. I've seen the future of politics in Georgia, and my friends, it is Republican. With the help of people like Commissioner Billy Lovett and Sheriff Bill Hudson, who have the courage and wisdom to recognize, like I did, that the Democratic Party has lost touch with the values of most Americans, we can change the face of Georgia politics. And my friends, we must all join in this great effort. I know Alec has committed himself and the resources of the Georgia Republican Party to accomplish one major yet fundamental goal: to recruit, train, and elect Republicans to office. He is recognized. He has recognized that this is the cornerstone to building a stronger and more viable Republican Party in this state. But it must be a shared commitment, shared by men and women who believe that this state and their children's future will be better served by a competitive two-party government at every level in Georgia. As Georgia Republicans, you offer hope to those who believe that the American dream is alive and well in America today. We offer opportunity to those who know that, in the words of Longfellow, destiny is not a matter of chance, it is a matter of choice. We offer faith in the working men and women of America who share the traditional values we find in God, family, and country. I challenge you to join the Georgia Republican leadership in accepting the responsibility of creating real change in Georgia politics. This means a commitment to organize precincts, to actively recruit candidates, to volunteer for campaigns, to financially support your state Republican Party, and to aid your state party's commitments to register new voters. I challenge each of you to make 1990 your year of destiny, Georgia Republicans. Make history. Elect more Republican legislators than ever before, and support the Georgia Republican Party as you move to become the majority party. For Georgia Republicans truly are the rising majority. Let me just add a few words here about this, because I know that a great many of them, most of you maybe, are converts to the Republican Party. Well, so am I. I was a lifelong Democrat. I voted four times. My first vote in 1932, and then four times for Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But as I told someone up here at the head table, if in Hollywood, if you don't sing or dance, you wind up as a public speaker. And so I was traveling the mashed potato circuit for my method or manner of personal appearances. And I started out talking about Hollywood and how it was kind of looked at askance by most of the people in the country, and I would try to correct the misapprehensions about it, such things as that divorce among the Hollywood people, motion picture people, was lower than the national average. That isn't the image that had been created of it, and so forth. But gradually, as I found myself speaking to chambers of commerce and so forth, I found, well, what am I doing just talking about Hollywood? So I began to do some research and about how businesses were being discriminated against by government and government regulations. And pretty soon I was doing a lot of research, and the Hollywood part of my speech got down to the introduction, and I began speaking about how government has an adversarial relationship in the United States with its business community. And one day, finally, I went home from a speaking trip and said to Nancy, I'm out there on the trail all the time speaking, preaching these messages, and then every 4 years I'm helping elect the people that make these things happen. And I set out to change. And I know what you found out. It isn't easy. It's almost like changing churches, leaving your church. But I finally picked a campaign and said, I'm going to be campaigning for the Republican candidate for president. When I told him that, he asked me if I'd re-registered, and I said, well, not yet, but I'm going to. Well, he said, why don't you wait till after the election? I think you'll be more effective if you're a Democrat campaigning for me. So I waited. We got him elected. And then time went on, and I still hadn't gotten around to that re-registering. And one night I stood up before an audience like this, and it was a Republican fundraiser. And in the middle of my speech, a woman stood up right out in the middle of the audience. And she yelled, have you re-registered yet? And I said, no, but I'm going to. She says, I'm a registrar. She came right down the center aisle, put the papers on the podium, and I signed up, and then said, now, where was I? When I voted the first time for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, his platform was reduce federal spending by 25%, eliminate useless bureaus and commissions in government. And then he said also, you should see that the Well, I'm forgetting some of the things here that he said, but it was, they were very real. Oh, he said, yes, return to the states and the local communities the power that has been unjustly seized by the federal government. Well, this began it. And now if you look, and then there was Al Smith, of course, who was a Democratic president, Democratic governor of New York, and who it didn't take too long before he came before the people nationwide on radio and said, I've been a Democrat all my life, but I'm taking a walk. He said, it's as if we all went swimming at the old swimming pool and the socialists came down and stole our clothing while we were in the water. But today, if you can point out to people that the things that we as Democrats always believed in, low tariff, free trade, today, for 8 years, I've been fighting the Democratic Congress because it is full of protectionism and wanting high tariffs, protectionist tariffs and so forth, which they would inflict on business. Once upon a time, that was the position of the Republicans. We now are the people who want free trade. And so many other things of this kind, that if you can point this out, maybe a lot more of your friends are going to join in. But point out also some figures. In the last 59 years, imagine what I think as an ex-president when I hear some Democratic congressman calling the deficit, the budget deficit, Ronald Reagan's deficit. Out of the 59 years, 55 of them have been a majority in the Congress, in the House of Representatives, of Democrats. And in the 59 years, only 8 of those scattered years have we seen a balanced budget. 51 of the years have been deficit budgets. And who's been in charge? The president can't spend a dime. Only the Congress can spend money. When they wail that we were benefiting the rich with our tax reduction, lowering that big rate of 70% down to 28%. But you know, there was a fellow in Egypt named Ibn Khaldun back in 1440. And Ibn Khaldun said, at the beginning of the empire, the rates were low and the revenue was great. At the end of the empire, the rates were great and the revenue was low. Look back at history. When they start telling us that we're just benefiting the rich with our tax changes, would it interest you to know that the top 1% of taxpayers, the highest income people in America, that 1% is now paying almost double the share of taxes from the income tax than it had been sharing when the rate was 70%. That was the very basis, the tax change in our recovery, our economy. And so we have now, without not 15 tax rates, but 3 of them, we have done this. In the first few years after our tax change, the revenues, that tax increased $372 billion. But the problem was the Congress increased the spending by $450 billion. So I think we're the answer to all of these things that have been going wrong. 55 years of a Democratic Congress means that the Republican congressmen or presidents in more than a half a century, in these 59 years, Republican presidents have only had 1 2-year period when they had a Republican House of Representatives, and that was during Ike's 8 years, for those 2 years. Now, what it means is that the people, you vote for the president's the only office that everyone votes for. And then you must vote for, because you believed you wanted what the president offered. But does it make sense then? Is it a check and balance to turn around then and elect a Congress that is pledged to prevent him from doing all the things he promised he'd do? That's what has been going on and going on too long. So I just feel that the time has come, and I compliment and congratulate all of you for the stand that you've taken, for the change that you've made. But maybe the way you should begin talking to your neighbors who haven't done this yet is to say, you didn't change. You just followed what was always the Democratic policy over into the only party that now represents that policy, which is the Republican policy. And I've taken more time, I guess, than I should here. But, no. No, I'll tell you. I'll just do something that I can't keep from doing lately. It's a new hobby of mine, and then I will quit. This hobby is I'm collecting stories, jokes, that I can absolutely establish are made up by the Soviet citizens, the people, and told among themselves. And they reflect a great sense of humor, but also a kind of a cynical approach to their system of government. I even told a couple of them to Gorbachev and got belly laughs out of them. But I told him first that they were his people's stories. Then, of course, there were a number of them I couldn't tell because it would be tactless. For example, one of their stories is a man walking down the street in Moscow. Soldier yells, halt. The man starts to run. The soldier shoots him. And another Russian said to the soldier, why did you do that? The soldier said, curfew. But he said, it isn't curfew yet. He said, I know. He's a friend of mine. I know where he lives. He couldn't have made it. But just one more. You know, in the Soviet Union, only one out of seven, or less than one out of seven families own an automobile. All those cars in the news pictures you see belong to the government, and they're driven by chauffeurs for the bureaucrats and all. Well, an order went out that anybody caught speeding must get a ticket. Anybody. Well, there are two motor cops out there and away, and Gorbachev came out of, I told him this one, Gorbachev came out of his dacha, his country home. He was late getting to the Kremlin. His limousine was waiting with the chauffeur there, and he ran out, and he said, get in the back seat, I'll drive. And down the road he went, past those two cops, and one of them took out after him. A few minutes, he's back with his friend. His friend says, well, did you give him a ticket? He said, no, I didn't. Well, he said, why not? We're supposed to give anybody. Who was it? Well, he said, it was just too important. Well, who was it? He said, I couldn't recognize him, but his driver was Gorbachev. Well, thank you, and God bless you all, and all of us turncoats, let's get busy at it and put this country back in safe hands. Thank you very much.